Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carville. Coming up, the 12 days of Christmas, giving or Scrooge-like for retailers.
There is a lot of happy talk. I'm not saying people aren't spending money, but they're not spending the amount of money that you'd be led to believe that the public are.
This is quite grim. Smaller shop on the independents. You'll see they're nearly all gone. Its days are numbered.
Rents, rates, wages, how are traders making a living? First the news from Aidan Fitzsimons.
Good evening. The waste management company Greyhound Recycling and Recovery has been fined for failing to prevent emissions and odours from its main storage facility in Dublin. Two of its directors were also prosecuted. Barry Lenehan reports.
Greyhound and directors Michael and Brian Buckley were taken to court by the Environmental Protection Agency for breaching waste management regulations after inspections of the Clondalkin site last year. The company pleaded guilty to the charges and was fined €10,000 at Dublin District Court. Brothers Michael and Brian Buckley from Turin-Urin, Dublin, had contested the charges but were found guilty. They were told they would be given probation if they donated €5,000 each to charity. Greyhound said it accepted the court's decision and said the issues highlighted had or were in the process of being addressed.
The United States has said a handshake in South Africa between President Obama and the Cuban leader Raul Castro was not pre-planned. It happened during today's memorial service for Nelson Mandela, attended by world leaders and tens of thousands of South Africans. A US official said there had been no substantive discussion between Mr. Obama and Mr. Castro, and that America still had grave concerns about human rights in Cuba. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton, has held talks with the Ukrainian president, Viktor Yanukovych, over the continuing standoff between police and anti-government protesters in the capital, Kiev. Mrs. Ashton also met opposition leaders and she visited the demonstrators in Independence Square, where she received a warm welcome. The jury at the inquest into the death of a two-year-old boy in County Cork earlier this year has found his death to be accidental. Valerius Martinatis fell from an upstairs window of his home in Middleton in May. The jury at Cork Coroner's Court recommended that families check the security of windows in their homes so similar tragedies can be avoided. The weather forecast, mild and windy tonight with rain and drizzle, temperatures 8 to 10 degrees. There's a warning that south to southeasterly winds will reach gale force overnight on coastal waters from Mizenhead to Loophead to Malinhead. Mild, windy and mostly cloudy tomorrow. That's all for the moment. Back to you, Audrey.
Aidan, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. We're discussing the retail industry tonight. Is it bonanza time in the run-up to Christmas? Is it sharing in or even helping to lead the so-called recovery we're told the country is experiencing? Or are people still not spending whatever money they have on the high street? We'll also debate the issues of rates and upwards-only rent reviews, as well as the provision of credit to traders who want to expand or who just want to pay their bills. And we'll hear too from some businesses, old and new, on their experiences at the moment. With me in studio tonight, Fine Gael TD Sean Kine, David Brennan, who is CEO of the Dublin City Business Association, Carl Dieter from Irish Mortgage Brokers and Advisors.ie, and Sean Murphy from Chambers Ireland. You're all very welcome indeed. Sean, having a good Christmas so far around the country?
Well, I'm currently going around the country in terms of consulting for 2014, and I was in Longford meeting Chambers in the Midlands late last week, and it was interesting that five new stores have opened up in Main Street or in the environs of Main Street in Longford. And there were a mixture of stores from Iceland is about to open up through to a spec service put planning permission in. That's a relatively good sign for what has been a town that would have faced a few challenges in recent times. The sense would be that we don't have a budget debate. Like this night in previous years, people would be trying to calculate how much money they have in their pockets. Mm-hmm. It's still very difficult for a huge amount of people out there. It's difficult for retailers out there. And you have the ongoing migration to online for a discrete number of retailers. But certainly, budget having been put to bed, employment numbers going up, tax receipts improving in November, all of these indicators are saying that we are having definitely a better, brighter outlook towards Christmas 2013.
And is that your experience outside of Longford? I mean, is that the picture you're getting from around the country?
Yeah, and similarly in the southeast, New Ross and places like that, there's a very strong improvement in agri-food and the agricultural sector in particular, and that is definitely helping in terms of smaller market towns. again, that is not to say that it isn't still very challenging. The sense one would get would be that spending is stronger in Dublin, clearly, and then softens as you go out from Dublin. But certainly, you know, when you're creating a net new 58,000 jobs, of which a large number are full-time jobs, you know, when you're seeing unemployment levels falling to levels last seen in 2009, mm-hmm. we're definitely in a better place than we were 2 years ago or three years ago when we were looking at, you know, a much darker period coming to Christmas, as was the case to now.
David Brennan, you're CEO of the Dublin City Business Association. What is the picture like in Dublin?
The picture is looking a lot better than it has been previously. We've had an extraordinarily difficult number of years in retail. We've had a very difficult time. It is interesting that as a nation we have held ourselves up. Retail has been under a lot of pressure. I completely and utterly agree with Sean. It's absolutely wonderful we have the budget out of the way. The indications for me, and I would deal, as you would understand, with a large number of people in the city centre, is that things are positive, things are better this year than they were last year. There is the point that we have been exceptionally lucky with the weather. Mm. We have the budget out of the way, and there is a sense that we are getting there. And for my experience over the last year as CEO of the Dublin City Business Association is things are positive. People know what they're dealing with. They understand what they're dealing with. And things are going to get better. I would tell you that I am optimistic about this Christmas.
Is money being made, though? Will businesses be in profit after this Christmas, do you think?
Not. I can't answer that question now. It's a little bit too early. I was a retailer in Dublin City Centre for 35 years, so I understand the retail trade. It's too early to answer that question. But what I will tell you is that should you decide to go into town and look around, there are people in town, there are people shopping. What is the one indicator? Bags. There are bags. So business is there. I believe over the next few weeks you will see a huge improvement in business. I believe that everyone has been making great efforts, and I am very optimistic for the future.
Would you share that optimism, Carl Dieter?
Well, I think the country is getting into a better place. Employment is starting to creep back. We do have pretty strong exporters. There are a lot of new jobs being made. A lot of them are self-employed people with no employees, meaning that people are finding some way to make a living for themselves, which I think is a very positive thing, rather than sitting around waiting for someone else to do it for them. In terms of where's retail going, I think retail is going to change a lot, and it already has changed a lot. I mean, I started off in retail. I used to sell nurses' uniforms of all things, so it was a bit of a change, which I don't know if it ever stood to me, but the point is, you know, that industry changed a lot. We went from making uniforms in the city centre to next of all they were made by a company called Port West out in Westport, and now they're all made in Asia. So everything is constantly in a state of flux. I think the company that I run now is a financial services company, but we are effectively a retail brokerage, and we distribute mainly over the internet, and that's loans for houses. So I think that when you're talking about retailers, you have to realise that High Street is kind of one end of it, but there's lots of other areas, and they're just as valid and just as important and capable of creating work and making a difference. And sometimes that comes to the detriment of other sectors. And to get the balance right and make it fair, it can be tricky because, you know, someone on Grafton Street might have very high rates, very high rent, and someone on a different road won't, but they're not competing for the same people. But that person's overall spend might not go to the High Street because of them. And how do you kind of try and make it a fair game for everybody? That's the thing that I always think is a big struggle, because you need to get consumption, mm-hmm. and our consumption figures have been down year on year. And things like raising VAT, because it always ends with the end or rests with the end user, makes it one of the most evil taxes. And we haven't lowered VAT, for instance, on traded services and things like that. So there's a lot of challenges out there, but I think people are resilient. This country has seen every misery you could hope for, be it famine, conquest, fighting amongst ourselves. the 50s, the 70s, the 80s. I mean, we're hardly going to give up now, so I'm an optimist.
Sean Kine, as we've been hearing from the others, I mean, you know, they believe that this is going to be an okay year. Perhaps we're starting from a very low base, but consumer sentiment is down. And the government in the last budget, you know, whatever you may think of the budget, but people are still having money taken out of their pockets rather than being put in.
Well, the situation, as far as I can see it, is positive but challenging. I mean, you know, the earlier budget was something that was looked for a long period of time by retailers because it had an impact ever since the change from April to December. It had an impact on the Christmas shopping period. Now, this was, I suppose, forced upon us by the European semester, but the early budget certainly got, the, if you like, the bad news out of the way, such as it was. A lot of the things were expected and known. Yes, there are still cutbacks. Unfortunately, we're still up till next week. We're still in a EUIMF programme, and hopefully, and I'd be interested in other people's comments, hopefully that in itself, the exit from the bailout, will spur on a certain element of confidence within the retail sector, within people's views, because no more than a budget, the fear of the unknown is often worse than actually receiving the news, and many people have, you know, haven't known for a long number of years as part of the Troika deal what was ahead of them. You know, we now know what the property tax is. You know, we know there will be a water charge into the future. But, you know, other than that, I think the commitment of the government in terms of protecting taxes, people's pay, because that's a tax on jobs. If you impact on income tax, on rates or bans, it's a tax on jobs. And the focus of the last three budgets, and indeed the first jobs initiative in 2011, has been employment. So all initiatives have been put in place. In 2011, in the early days of Taoiseach coming into power, they set up the advisory group on small business, which incorporated chambers, ISME, Small Firms Association, and a raft of other bodies to actually put in place policies and proposals that have been used in the last three budgets. Mm-hmm. And particularly, for example, the reduction in VAT, which took place within 100 days of government and which was retained in the last budget despite a lot of expectations that it wouldn't be, has led to jobs being created. And
yet, on the basis of that Brussels-based report which was published yesterday, we may still not be out of the woods even next year when they're saying that the budget may still have to be even tougher than the government is planning.
Well, a lot of it is predicated on growth in the economy. Mm. And that's, you know, I mean, and I firmly have the belief that confidence is a huge factor in terms of growth. People's confidence to spend. And I'll go back to the point of people not knowing what is ahead of them. So I think that is, to a large extent, to a certain extent, taken out of the equation. And you know, so I think that's something that is positive. You know, we also have to look at in terms of the confidence. There is actually a lot of savings out there. People who don't have money might obviously understand or agree where this is coming from, but there is anecdotally a lot of people have savings, and to encourage them to spend is something that needs to be done. If they can spend on the high street and the retail sector, you know, putting money back into coffers, putting money into small businesses that they can take on employment. And we also must look at, as well as job creation, job retention is hugely important for small businesses that are struggling. Will I be able to keep on Johnny or Patty or Mary?
Carl, do you agree with that the best way to stimulate is to spend, or is it to save?
It's always a hard case of trying to get it right, and I suppose it depends on whether you lean towards more kind of right-wing kind of ideology of cut, or the more left-leaning, which is to stimulate via spending. What the government have done is they've raised, or next year anyway, will raise the tax rate on savings up to 41%. So even if it's a humble savings, you'll be paying as if you're a high earner. That should probably make a difference. It is also probably going to be part of the reason behind the upward move in property prices, which can have very negative outcomes, but which also benefits bank balance sheets and helps people feel wealthy and get rid of their negative equity. The other thing about savings is that there's about 90 billion in savings, in private citizen savings in Ireland. So there's a lot of money out there. It does tend to have some concentration in certain age groups, and certain age groups have felt the pinch differently. When we hear that the government didn't raise taxes, that is kind of a Jesuitical view. If you raise levies and costs on everything other than wages, it's pretty much the same as a wage cut, which allows people in politics to say one thing and do another. And that's just part of the game that all politicians have to play. It's not particular to any one party. But releasing that, I think, or encouraging that, is in one way mistaken. If we could find a way to let people have more money for themselves to decide what to do, rather than saying we're going to try and get you to spend your nest egg, you know, because there's a natural propensity to save. Like a squirrel is a dumb animal, and they've got the common sense to put aside nuts for winter. So people are the same, but they even do it on a more complex level. And what you're effectively doing is telling people, or telling the squirrel in this example, you know, go eat those nuts now, bang in the middle of autumn, or whatever. It doesn't work that way. A far better thing is to increase the overall capacity for them to have their own wealth, and then let them make their own decisions.
Sean.
Yeah, but I think the problem might be the squirrel might be saving too many acorns these days. I think that what we're trying to get is a trend of household savings would have been 6-8%, which would be quite relatively conservative and still would give you a reasonably good savings rate over many years. During the bust, that went up to 14% as households really were saving because they weren't sure where the money would be in 6 months' time. Now that more people have a bit more confidence on the sustainability of their companies and their jobs and where they are and their income, and the whole idea is to try and get some people spending some of that money on things like we would have campaigned hard for our home improvement initiatives in Budget 2013. And I'd say the government listened to us, and the anecdotal feedback would be that consumers have been thinking about getting that new bathroom, getting that new kitchen. That's already stimulating in terms of construction employment, which is one sector that really you would have to say is overshot in the bust. And so that is a very good thing for the repair, maintenance and improvement sectors, which is the white goods and everything else. And government ultimately will gain from that in terms of VAT repayments. One thing I would say, though, is that, you know, the local property tax, the Chamber Network endorsed the local property tax when it came in. But the whole idea was it was a local property tax to fund local services. And the major concern of the Chamber Network right now is that we're seeing an ongoing diminution of the local government fund, which was the funding from the Department of the Environment given to local authorities.
Yeah, it's funded by car tax.
But it was earmarked for that. That's being diminished. And yet the local property tax is not going into making up that gap. When, you know, the word we're seeing is it's going into initiatives such as Irish Water, and we need that investment in Irish Water. But the whole rationale of a local property tax was to support that. And when you have an article in the Irish Examiner today, and our colleagues in Cork Chamber talked about this, when Martin Reardon, the county manager of Cork, is presenting a budget not knowing what his local government fund is going to be from the Department of the Environment this year, you know, that is not where we need to be that feeds into rates and a tax then in terms of business, because they don't know where they're going to get their funding from.
Apart from rates, which are about a third of whatever funds
27-28%, yeah,
just to give it a ballpark, the local property tax isn't going to stay local. The 2013 one didn't even get anywhere near localities. It went into general exchequer. The 2014 one, because it's only when you do a full year, is going to be with the local authorities, but there'll still be a transfer mechanism. And that's really one of the tragedies of this, is that what we're going to do is say tax Dublin to pay for Leitrim. And in economic thinking, you can take a progressive view and say, oh, well, that's right, because Dublin has more amenities. Yeah, but they also pay for it, and we have more crime and more pollution and more congestion. But the whole idea of linking tax to expenditure is totally lost. We weren't even meant to get a property tax based on values. It was meant to be on site values. That was in the programme for government. That was suggested by the Commission of Taxation. Anyone with any sense said that's what we should do. And then we went and did the exact opposite of it. And now we're badly managing that process as well. So that's a big concern.
Okay, Sean, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, well, first of all, the local government fund, hopefully the county managers will know in the next 24 hours to 48 hours, certainly 24 hours, I think, from the minister today has stated that that'll be acknowledged, and they'll be able to frame their budgets to that effect. The property tax, you know, the retention by local authorities from 2015, is the idea is that they'll be able to retain 80% of the property tax. At that stage, the local councillors will have options. They'll have options whether to reduce the tax or increase it indeed by 15% in Dublin, I'd imagine, because of the high value of properties. They will have an option and a desire, I think, to reduce tax. And they'll also have the option to, depending on the size of the local property tax base, they'll have the opportunity to reduce rates in businesses, which I think is what we would be looking for, what councillors, I'd imagine, well, many councillors would be looking for. So those are choices, and real choices that the local elected representatives will have from 2015, those that are elected from next June. So I think that's a positive. And I think, you know, the property tax is ensuring that everybody is contributing something. Everybody who owns a house is contributing something. We've heard so often that there are some people who are contributing not a lot, who may not be contributing much on tax, and yet still have a property, and to be able to force them to contribute something for the services
Sean,
that they
you
get.
Just want to come back.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it is important in terms of the local government bill going through the House of the Oireachtas right now. We're making presentations on it and everything else, but in terms of, you're looking at the market towns of Ireland, one of the big issues for market towns of Ireland is car parking, and the way the guidance document has been issued from the Department of the Environment right now, the municipalities, which will take over from town councils, are actively, in our view, being incentivized to increase car parking fees, not reduce them, because the whole idea is that if a town municipality decides to cut the car parking fees for a window or a period, that if that impacts on their revenues, mm-hmm. the transfer of revenues from the county into which that town council will be subsumed will be reduced on a sliding scale. That disincentivises pro-car parking initiatives that will get the consumers, the mammies and daddies of Ireland, into town centres, vis-a-vis out of town, for example.
There is an issue here, and one of the issues is, and I completely agree with what Sean has said, it is absolutely crucial, and it is crucial, that the monies that are raised through the property tax are kept in the areas. If one, and I can only speak for Dublin, if you look at Dublin in 2014, if you look at what the City Council are going to do for Dublin, and I will give you 4 points. One, you currently have the repaving of Grafton Street. You have the biggest infrastructural project in the country going in. You have the joining of the Lewis Lions. This is going to take place. It's going to make Dublin a wonderful city. You have just had the Lord Mayor relatively recently publish the public realm document for the Grafton Street area. And should you go to the north side, you evidently will be aware of the fact that we are going to have a new city library. We are going to have a complete and utter revamped Parnell Square. Dublin is going to be one of the great cities of Europe. It is going to be superb. Yes, I agree with my colleagues at the table, but I would put a point to you. People of the city have had their difficulties. We are getting out of it. People are positive. And we do have a situation, very simply, that we have come through a very bad time. Mm-hmm. And Dublin as a city is going to be totally and utterly ready for business. But I would agree utterly with Sean that the government must listen. They must give the money to the city manager of Dublin and to the city council.
Okay.
And I would strongly agree with
that. Well, I mean, it is a challenge in terms of all local authorities because their budgets are constrained and not all local authorities have the same rate base. And yet we do have a national perspective that needs to be reflected in terms of how authorities are funded. It is interesting, though, the city and county manager of Limerick has just announced a 15.6% rate cut this year. That's a fantastic initiative, which the City of Chamber of Limerick are delighted with, and it brings the rate base in common between the county and the city. And our view would be, from a structural point of view, the ongoing consolidation of local government needs to deliver those kind of proactive savings, and that they ultimately need to feed into reductions in local authority charges for the businesses that make these towns so livable in. That's the big challenge, because a lot of the towns, there's been a huge hollowing out of businesses.
Well, absolutely, and we'll talk more about rent and rates in a few minutes, but I want to get back to the coal face, I suppose, the people who are running businesses in the country at the moment. What is their experience? A couple of texts. James in Sligo says, consumer confidence, most people have no more money left and the charges that have been imposed have left people in poverty. And Helen says, I'm from New Ross. I became self-employed 3 years ago. I supply bread and cakes to shops and believe me, things are going from bad to worse here. I work 6 days a week. I haven't taken a break in 3 years. The South East is dying and our local politicians in Wexford and South Kilkenny are not interested. Well, our reporter Richie Byrne was out and about in Dublin city centre this afternoon, and he spoke to one trader in the Georgia Street arcade in the city centre.
My name is Anne-Marie DeBeery and I have a shop called Retro in Georgia Street Arcade, and we've been here for a long, long time, 25 years. We're finding it very quiet and we're not used to that, because as you can see, we're a very different shop and we would have always had a very niche market.
Are you seeing footfall dramatically decreased this year?
Very much so. There's a lot of, I don't know whether I should say, about people trying things on and then buying them online. And that's extremely frustrating.
Is that a big problem for you?
It's a very big problem.
So people come in here, pick out the garments, then check them out online.
Check the names.
So they're doing the research in here.
Mm-hmm. At the expense of my staff. And we know this for a fact. I mean, there are many factors about why retail is bad. 23% VAT is one of them. I think property is increasing. That's what people are talking about. You know, shops, the value of property maybe is increasing again a little. But
does that mean your rents are going up then?
My rent hasn't gone up, thank God. It didn't go down either when it was bad.
How long?
About the last 5 years. And in this arcade, we not only have rent, service charges, which are quite high, and rates as well. That all adds up. And there's a lot that could be done in the city centre too, to police it in a better way. In many ways, it can be quite unsafe. That's not good.
How do you see your future then?
How do I see the future? Everybody loves what I do.
Love isn't enough though. Love doesn't pay the rent.
Love doesn't pay the rent. This is quite grim, but I do know that the boutique situation, or the smaller shop, or the independents, you'll see they're nearly all gone. Its days are numbered. And it makes me kind of cross, because people keep saying, you're a fantastic shop. What would you do if you were gone? Well, the thing to do is support the independent retailers. We also can't compete with the big multinational stores that come in. They can sell their stuff off for virtually nothing. They also get much longer credit lines than we have. I mean, we can't get credit anymore. Overdraft facilities have been slashed. So that makes business very difficult.
So how are you managing from the month to month when you buy in your stock and to the point that there's probably have stocks sitting
on
the...
We manage. It's difficult, particularly at sort of holiday time or Christmas time. We should be able to get a line of credit from the bank, especially if you're established with them for many years, as I've been. But no, there's nothing like that anymore. So you have to have the cash, pay for your stuff in advance.
Do you feel totally on your own then?
Pretty much so.
I was Anne-Marie Dubiri there, who runs a shop in the Georgia Street Arcade in Dublin City Centre. Well, Richie also spoke to another trader on Grafton Street this afternoon.
Hi, I'm John Adamson. I'm from a company called Adamson Luggage. We're an independent retailer based in the Dublin City Centre. We've been around since the mid-30s. I mean, we're a family business. We have 5 full-time and we have 1 part-time staff. So out of all that, we haven't had to let anybody go. You know, but what we did have to do is look at our new products and maybe getting cheaper products and look for special offers. And look, we've been through many recessions. I've done it, my father's done it, his grandfather's done it. But it has been slow this year now. We found, like, locally in retail, a couple of the people beside us have found it tough. You know, in the local area, people would assume that being Grafton Street and the Grafton Street area, it's doing quite slow at the moment. We're finding people aren't spending their money as much as we thought they would have. Last year, it seemed a little bit better, but people seem to be a little bit reluctant to spend the money this year.
When you hear about more people at work, you know, GDP up a little bit, that more people are being employed, and also the property market, is that reflecting at all in what you're experiencing?
Yeah, well,
a lot of happy talk.
There is a lot of happy talk. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying people aren't spending money, but they were not spending the amount of money that you would be led to believe that the public are. People are shopping and there's more people coming into our shop, but maybe not spending as much as they used to.
So as a retailer, what are the things that you're seeing that are impacting on your business?
What's making it harder for us is the rates. The rates and the rent. I mean, you take, for example, next week we're expecting the Dublin rates to go up and there's rumours that they're going up a massive amount. You know, we've heard quite of a number of people who've had very, very big rates increases, so we're worried about that.
That'll have a huge impact on your bottom line.
It will, yeah, as does rent, you know, which we're in negotiations with that at the moment. But we don't get enough footfall to warrant the price and the increase that you will always get, whether it be in rates or in rent.
Are they going to have to be more realistic about that, in your opinion? Are they going to have to look at it more?
I don't know.
There's only so much money you can get out of it.
Well, you look at the way they're talking about South William Street now. That's to be the up-and-coming street, and they're going to repave and readdress this whole area. So that's only going to throw the rates up, trifold.
As regards paying your rent, would it bother you who your landlord was? Because there's a lot of talk of foreign money coming in, buying up.
No, not at all. Money talks. It's bottom line. You know,
you don't care who's buying Ireland.
Up to a point. At the end of the day, it's the bottom line. It's the money that we pay over. And as long as we get the service and as long as we can get to talk to our landlords and have a good relationship with the landlord, that is the key thing. You know, it's having a landlord. If you're unlucky enough to have a landlord who didn't talk to you and didn't have any communication, that would be a nightmare. That would be a nightmare for anybody. But we don't have that problem. And touch wood, to date, we haven't had that problem. We won't in the future either. But there are people out there who do struggle. There's no communication. It's just always rent, up, increase. It's not that, like, the rents will increase, the rates will increase, but the footfall doesn't. You're still only going to get the same people coming in and out of the shop.
So how do you square that circle then?
Our rates and our rent, etc., has all gone up. The cost's gone up, electricity, everything's gone up.
you know, still the same amount of people. So you've just got to think outside the box. You've got to social media, you've got to advertise, you've got to come up with special offers. You've just got to keep in touch with people. And when a person comes in the door, you look after that customer. You know, make them feel special. They will come back. That's, you know, retail is not easy. People expect to open up a retail shop and just expect people to walk in. You won't last very long doing that. You have to work hard at it. You know, and you work hard at it, you will get the rewards. But if somebody walks in the door, they're coming in because they want to look at your shop. So you've got to engage.
Fight and talk.
Fight and talk. That's it. Out with the gloves.
That was John Adamson there, who runs a business on Grafton Street in Dublin, talking to our reporter Richie Byrne. David Brennan, he mentioned rates and rent there, and we'll talk for the next few minutes about rent and the upwards only rent reviews, which were so prominent in the news for a very long time. Is that still an issue?
It will always be an issue. However, it's an issue that has, in my opinion, been dealt with. Your clip was most succinct. The man knew what he was talking about. In my experience, the situation has been, I do not agree with the upward only rent system. However, it is my experience within the last couple of years in the city that landlords have been reasonable. Your clip, that gentleman made 5 points to you. One of the points he made was that if you talk to your landlord, you can do business. Mm-hmm. This has happened in the city. It's happened to my members, and I would have both. I would have landlords and I would have retailers.
Is it more the norm than not?
It is the norm that, yes, it is the norm that people have been reasonable. Mm. That's one thing. The second thing is...
Reasonable being what now?
Reasonable that they will negotiate and they will assist you. They will assist you. It may be for a period of time, but they certainly have no interest in putting you out of business and they certainly want to keep you in business and they are willing to negotiate.
So the rent doesn't go up?
Yes, that has been the case. And in some cases, I can tell you that I would know quite a number of cases where it may be for a couple of years that rents have gone down. There has been a reasonableness. If you allow that this situation got out of hand some time ago, there was an enormous amount of media coverage of it. And one of the things is that it was a bit of a false dawn insofar as that you were talking about something where we had people enter into legal agreements in a free will, and it is not within the gift of anybody to change those, and that is the law of the land. Mm. However, my experience has been that people will talk. Second thing I would like to just point out to you is that there is, perhaps for your listeners, a slight misunderstanding. You're talking about the rates. What has happened in Dublin is that after a long period of no revaluation, the valuation has been redone in the city. That has nothing to do with Dublin City Council, and it is... The rates per se is not what they're talking about. That is outside of the gift of anybody. In relation to all of your clips, one of the things that I would totally agree with as a someone who represents retailers is I do think the banks have been dragging their feet.
Mm. No, but just go back to the rates for a second. Who sets the rates then?
Valuation office.
Well, there are two different issues here, Carl. The rates as they are now, there is a complete revaluation has mm-hmm. been done for the entire city. The rate in the pound is done by Dublin City Council. There are two different things, but we have had a complete revaluation of the city. It's the first time it's happened in 10 years.
He said the rumour is, the word is, that the rates in Dublin are going to go up hugely next week. Is that right or wrong?
Depends where the footfall is and depends where your business is based. And if your business was on a formerly very busy street that's got a lot quieter, then all things being equal, your rates may well go down. But if your business was on a street that historically was very quiet, but has since become quite trendy and has a much higher footfall, you're going to face a challenge in terms of your rates. And that ties in with why you need the local property tax to address a broadening of the revenue base for local authorities, and you need a local authority employment numbers and everything else that are right sized to meet the budgets that they have to face in terms of focusing on frontline services and not being too costly. But I think in terms of the upwards only rent issue, I mean, around the country, that was not the issue. There was a huge clamour about it at the time. Chambers around the country told us typically the landlord knew the tenant and there was huge flexibility. Mm. And we as a country cannot afford to break contract law. So I thought it was interesting about the whole upwards only debate. NAMA was instructed to revise proactively budget rents on clients who were basically paying too much for properties that had fallen into their hands. The last time I looked, they had actually repriced 300 properties, less than 300 properties, even though NAMA is the biggest landlord in the state. And yet the amount of coverage that was put into upwards only rent reviews in the run-up to the election beforehand, it really does beg the question of how much statistical analysis do we, all of us, do prior to informing debates on this
or other types of analysis when you can get a popular bogeyman and blame something on them.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's
sadly,
it's
a default position that a lot of
this is the point that I
a lot of people
earlier.
Get
never campaign in
they fall into these default positions of various bogeymen that we then rage against. I am a landlord. I am also a tenant, and I can tell you this: our landlord of our company on the commercial lease has been absolutely great to us. Our industry saw its incomes cut by 50% in 2008 overnight, no warning, just bang. All the banks acted unilaterally. And then the market dropped 95%, meaning there was about €2.50 for every 100 that used to go around. And apart from having to make lots of horrible decisions and fire people that I know and love my whole career who now don't speak to me, and that's just part of the fallout of trying to get through it, I had to tell the landlord, I said, we need to do something. And he did, and he worked with us, and he's a good guy, because landlords aren't some big, you know, horrible person waiting outside to smoke a cigar and laugh while you get thrown out in the road to starve and set fire to your thatched roof. Mm-hmm. This is all crap from famine years and Land League that is still buried in people's minds.
But did you see the programme last night, Who's Buying Ireland?
Well, you know,
frankly, I thought that was brilliant.
We need as much new money in this country as possible. The idea that it's a scandal that new people are... because we'll get velocity money going.
But are those landlords as understanding as you, Carl, or the landlords that you guys are dealing with?
Well, if you look at what those landlords are buying for a start, they tend to be projects that have not worked, and they're trying to make them work. So they're actually in the process of attracting tenants. So if you take the one like the CHQ building, he has to get tenants in. So he's probably going to make very favorable terms. The landlords that tend to be like the most crucifixion prone are actually the life insurance companies. And that's where you see, for instance, the likes of Carluccio's, which was a restaurant that said, right, we're closing. And then only at that point, when it was an absolute default event, did they renegotiate. They can be hard to deal with, but your average commercial landlord who does it as a business, and there's lots of them, are actually really reasonable people who don't want to see good tenants out of business.
This is the point I made to you earlier. You know, there is a huge will in the city and throughout the country for us to be positive. And it is occurring and it is happening.
Sean.
Yeah, I mean, coming from Galway, I have to say it wasn't a huge issue at any stage in terms of the upward only rent reviews. I think there was some very high profile cases in Dublin that were dealt with. Yeah. And I mean, look, as the lads said, it's in no landlord's interest to see a business closed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, to be proactive and to work with their tenants, I think that's obviously something that's in everyone's interest. And, you know, I can see the concerns that certain people have, and as David explained, the issue about the revaluation in Dublin.
But your party's jumped on the bandwagon, didn't you, by making your pre-election promises to abolish upward-only rent reviews?
It wasn't a particular issue for me at the election. It wasn't a particular issue in Galway, but it was certainly a desire at the time. You know, the Attorney General advised after that it wasn't possible legally, that they'd have to set up a compensation fund to compensate landlords, so that wouldn't have gone down well with the Irish public if their taxes were going out to compensate landlords for the reductions in rents. So I mean, that's, you know, obviously no government can introduce legislation that the Attorney General advises against. But I mean, you know, the revaluation is probably more of an impact, as David explained, in relation to the Dublin authorities, and some will it's bringing more equity into the system. Some will go up and some will go down, and that process will be rolled out across the country. I think it's in Waterford, it's possibly done, and they're rolling out to other areas as well. So there may be businesses listening who will be reduced and more that will increase.
Sean Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, the big challenge for Dublin is that, unlike Fingal and South Dublin and even DLR, you don't have a massive rate base that can actually take the pressure. So in North County Dublin, you had Blanchardstown Town Centre and you had the pavilions,
Airside,
which took the pressure, and Airside, which took the pressure off Main Street Soars and Main Street Blanchardstown business. In DLR, you had the Dundrum Centre, which has actually taken a huge amount of footfall out of Dublin, but also down as far as Arklow and sucked it into the Dunleary Rathdown area. And you can see the impact in Dunleary Main Street in particular. It's a much more challenged footfall area. And that does tie in with the fact that, you know, you go around the M50, there's a Charlestown shopping centre just outside Finglas. It's in the Fingal County Council area. And guess what? They've facilitated that to get a big rate base into Fingal County Council. And guess what? The old streets of Finglas, the market town of Finglas, have been significantly challenged as a result of that.
And is it finished, Charlestown, or is it still?
Well, you have a supermarket there and you have big box retailers and everything else. But I mean, my point is, you've that there in Limerick similarly, you've big box retailers outside of Sligo Town. That's where the property development incentive for local authorities went all wrong, because they chased development contributions and they all became mesmerised with the potential rates they would get from new big box retailers, and it led to us developing and delivering far too much retail unit space.
And you mentioned Dundrum during one of the tapes. I mean, Indeed. It's there as well, sucking the business out.
Dublin, though, having said that, we've got the IFSC. There's a lot of growth there. We've got Docklands. Mm-hmm. And Dublin also gets hammered, because every time the government move into any building, it gets derated. And it costs the city in excess of 30 million every year, because you can't rate revenue. You can't rate any kind of, state level government building. So everyone is kind of looking to get those rates and that contribution in to meet their budget. And then, for instance, Dublin goes to costs that other places don't have. So, for instance, Fingal might not have firemen. They're really Dublin City firemen who are effectively seconded into another unit out there. Mm-hmm. And we have all these various issues. Dublin also has a lot of costs in terms of cleanup from rubbish that is brought from outside into the city. But then we have events which put revenue into the city. So it's a really mixed up situation. Like, running a city is an incredibly complex thing. But what shouldn't be too complex is how you pay for it. And the people who create the cost and who benefit from the services should pay for it. And it should be linked to those costs. All my sisters in America, they get these bills for their property tax, which are far higher than ours. Mm-hmm. But it shows library, $200, local school, $500, sheriff's department, $500. And it breaks it down and tells you where it was spent. We are so far away from that, because it's a completely opaque, broken system, that until we get there, people are always going to begrudge, avoid, undervalue. The only good thing about this property tax, if you're from a, let's take everyone's money point of view, is the fact that they introduced a market value based one at the bottom of a property cycle, because the next one is just going to go up. Mm-hmm. The first round is about compliance. The next process is about maximizing income. And it's when that one comes around, we're all going to realize that we were had.
David.
I think I'd like to just pass a comment. I think Carl has been most succinct and absolutely on the button here. Dublin City Business Association, for a long period of time, has indicated that it feels that government is not being reasonable with the City of Dublin. The City of Dublin is the economic engine. 62% of the taxes of the country come from the city centre. It is the economic engine, and when it rises, all boats will rise. Now, there is an issue here. The figure Carl suggested, it was 30. It's 38 million that the government do not give to the city authorities for us to run the city. Those of us that work in it, live in it, eat in it and whatever. There is the issue that Dublin is not being fairly treated. Perhaps there is an issue that we would start looking at our political system. We do not have a huge amount of residency in Dublin city centre. Therefore, we have counties that have a huge number of TDs, and we don't have a great number of TDs looking after. The one thing that can make a difference to our country is the economic engine of Dublin. Mm-hmm. Carl made a point, I utterly agree with him. Dublin is expected to pay so many costs. I would like to take you back just to the gentleman who spoke earlier, and we, all of us, have been talking earlier on. Retail, as you know it, and as you knew it 10 years ago, has changed. You listen to Carl, you listen to Sean, you listen to Sean. It has changed. And the reason it has changed is because now 18 to 20% of the market is going to be taken by the internet. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting, in your clip, that gentleman said, you have to social media, you have to work, you have to get out. Retail is not the same as it was 5 years ago. People like me understand this. Retailers in town know it. And it is a matter of, as that gentleman said, you have to get out and you have to work and fight. Okay. And I utterly agree with what Carl has said. things are changing and we as a people have to change. But I can tell you things are getting better.
Sean Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, it is important, though, to remember that Dublin is one market in a big country, and Dublin gains as well in terms of taxes gathered around the country getting spent. So, you know, there is a balance sheet there. And equally, you know, Dublin City Council has a budget not far off €1 billion a year.
I'd be willing to get granular with that, because it's a net donator rather than a net receiver.
I mean, most capital cities gain as well. You know, there's a trade-off there is all I would say. And
more expensive rent, higher property costs, indeed, less education access capital, in many cases. Multiple.
I mean, I'm just conscious lower of community that we have chambers cohesion, around the country.
You know, all these great things that come with cities.
No, indeed, but we don't have, for example, I mean, I am struck when I'm meeting chambers around the country, the levels of emigration outside of, you know, in the West, for example, vis-a-vis the Dublin area are just completely, utterly different.
And always
Indeed, yes. But my point is, and part of that reason is because you have the network effect of a very large urban area with the opportunities that come from that. Clearly, there's been a re-establishment of emigrant routes to our other markets where people have links. But my point is, there's been a big change, and one has to have a national perspective in these things when one thinks about it. Turning to the ongoing migration to the net and everything else, one positive development as well would be the rollout of postcodes in 2014. We've been campaigning for a long time, and the reason why it's so crucial is you'll get unique identifiers that retailers all over the country can start actually getting the business case together for actually migrating themselves to online and servicing online sales. And that's something that actually we have been campaigning for a long time, and that can hopefully help, because so much of the retail spend that goes online in Ireland actually goes to out of country businesses, mm-hmm. and we need more Irish owned businesses.
Sean Kine, do you dispute that Dublin has been neglected?
Well, I won't get many votes back home by saying that this has been neglected.
Glad?
But look, what I mean,
response
50% of the population live in Leinster, but you know, and obviously Dublin as our capital city. Yeah, look, I want to see Dublin thrive. Capital cities need to thrive. It's positive for the whole country.
If you have a
capital city that looks bad or feels bad or gets a bad vibe, it's a bad impression for the country, because you know you have the main airport, you have people coming in. But we need also regional balance. As I said, 50% of the population live in Leinster. We have challenges in rural Ireland, as has been pointed out. You know, you hear the anecdotes about the local GAA teams and all of that. And you know, there are more opportunities in the greater Dublin area, in whether it be the surrounding counties and the multinationals. That's not to say we haven't, you know, the multinational sector as well has a huge impact in my own area in Galway, and a lot of positives there as well. It's very, very important in terms of the IT and pharmaceuticals and other clusters as well around the country. But there are still challenges in rural Ireland. There's no point in anyone trying to pretend. We've seen a large depopulation of our young people, and obviously the opportunities that arise for those, a lot of them would have been working in the construction sector. Mm-hmm. Again, there are positive indications, the scheme that has been put in that in the budget. There's a demand for housing in many areas, not everywhere in the country, but there's a demand certainly in the greater Leinster area as well. So there will be opportunities into the future in terms of that as well.
Well, look, we're going to hear again from another business. This time we're going to hear from two people who have set up a business in the middle of a recession. They are freelance web designers Cian O'Sheehan and Stephen Foy, and they've established what they think may be a world's first in Harold's Cross in Dublin in the past 2 months. Donal O'Hurley, he caught up with them earlier today.
Well, we're called The Website Shop, and as far as we know, it's the world's only walk-in retail-based web design service where you can actually pop in through the door and chat face-to-face with a web designer about getting a new website or improving your existing website.
So new high-tech idea, but very, very low-tech approach to it. You just walk into a shop and buy a website in the same way that you might walk in and buy a pair of jeans.
Yeah, I mean, we feel that conventionally web designers are quite isolated away from who they do business with. So this is a way to, you know, make it a bit more personal and a bit more inviting and welcoming.
Why would you start a groundbreaking business in the middle of the worst recession we've had in many, many decades?
Well, it was a perfect time for us to do it. We were able to experiment and see could the business model be viable because of rents being maybe that little bit lower than they were before. And we also, because there was a pop-up shop available in Dunleary, we were able to test the concept there in a very low-risk manner.
So is there any actual truth in the adage that the middle of a recession could be the best time to start a business? Or is there any truth in that?
I'd like to think so. It'd be good for us if it was. It allows that kind of low barrier to entry with the rents being suitable for what we're actually trying to do. It means that if we can make it work now, then we can surely make it work if things improve or when they improve.
How is business?
business has been good. We're getting a number of walk-ins, and we're also getting, we seem to have had a few people coming in and asking for websites as gifts.
So you open the gift card then or whatever, and there's a www.something.ie, whatever, you log into that, and it's your own website that somebody has bought you.
I guess we're getting people who are asking about getting a website for Christmas for someone that they love. And why not, I suppose, it's new and interesting, I guess. So,
has the experience of starting up a business in Ireland so far, you're only a couple of months old, so you're still very much in the startup phase, has it been a positive or a negative experience for you?
Well, things are going well so far. We're seeing a lot of the people that we deal with every day are, by and large, very positive and optimistic about the future. They're coming to us at a critical point. They either are starting something new or they're at the point where they say that they have to get themselves out there more. That's the context in which we're dealing with people. So there is more optimism out there and an urgency to get back on top of things and get yourself out there.
Anything negative? Have you had your rates letter yet?
We've got a couple of letters from the council, but it's on the to-do list, I guess, putting the focus on our clients right now. That's our excuse.
You don't expect the bailiffs at the door any moment?
Not yet, no.
Kino Sheehan and Stephen Foy talking there to Donal O'Herlihy at their business in Harold's Cross in Dublin a little earlier today. Sean Murphy, is that a different type of business, perhaps a good business to set up during a recession?
Well, I mean, I'll let the business themselves speak for themselves in that regard, but there is no doubt that there are big opportunities in online and in activities such as that. But the sense one gets when goes around the country, I always think of there's a member in Clonmel Chamber who is a man with a van, but he's delivering goods online for online retailers in his area, and he's making a good living on it. There's any number of businesses that one encounters that are in that space. I was talking to a business last night that is involved in energy management services, and you think, well, what does that mean? But they're saving money for suppliers that actually, from which you can actually, cut your bottom line, because people aren't thinking about the amount of money they spend on energy wasting as opposed to, so that it just depends on the segment you're in. I think the other area that was interesting, they're talking about the bailiffs and everything else, that there is an issue with regard to those businesses that are dealing with cash flow constraints. How we work with them, how the revenue commissioners work with them is a big challenge. There's a sense, I was down in New Ross recently, there's a sense that depending on the local inspector of taxes, attachment letters can be put on almost too quickly for a business that has paid taxes for many years and hopefully will pay those taxes in the future. And that's the type of kind of over-aggressive tactics can actually be counterproductive in terms of actually pushing a business over the line. The same issue would apply with the use of the tax clearance certificate process if it's done wrong, it actually can make a business that's cash flow constrained even more vulnerable. And that's something we need to think about in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think the point about starting a business when things are hard is very well made. And I think that the increase in employment, which is actually self-employed people, is partly a demonstration of that. If you look back through history, particularly the history of financial crises, what you see is huge innovation, huge wealth created as a result of the fallout. You look at some of the legendary investors in the world, guys like Jim Rogers, who was a commodities trader, made all his money in the 70s when things went wrong. Bill Gross, who runs PIMCO, which is the largest bond fund in the world. Again, most of his wealth was created in the 70s. Warren Buffett, when you find something that's undervalued. Sir Templeton, Wilbur Ross, they all have something in common, is that they take broken situations and they fix them. And granted, your average person isn't going to wake up in the morning and do a billion euro deal, but everyone who does a billion euro deal starts off with a 1 euro or a 10 euro or whatever it is. All success has to start somewhere, and there is huge opportunity at a time like this. So even in my own trade where we're doing retail brokerage, I know that somebody's going to come in and find a way to automate the entire financial advice process eventually. And they're going to put us out of business and lots of other people. Or we're going to put them out of business. Or we're all going to go out. I don't know. The one thing is, though, is that's actually an important thing. You need death for life to occur. That goes in nature. It goes in life. It's a perfectly natural thing. And from those ashes, that's where the entrepreneurs create the next generation of innovation and wealth. So I'm delighted to hear what they're doing, and I hope lots of other people do it too.
David.
2 points. Point number one, I would be the oldest one in the studio. And when I was young, if you got a job, you went to the bank, and that's what you did, or whatever the case may be, young people nowadays will change role in their lives 4, 5, 6 times. That's the first thing. The second thing is innovation is absolutely fantastic in Ireland. You look at the success of the IDA, you look at any of our state agencies, Enterprise Ireland, we are continually producing good people. There is a situation where should you, and I would be the first to say that retail is utterly changed. We've all agreed it around the table. But I would also say to you, if you want to walk into Dublin City Centre tomorrow, I would respectfully suggest to you that you will see at least, and I can tell you exactly where you go, 7, 8, 9, 10 in Dublin 1, new businesses starting. There is an optimism there. We are getting over the troubles. The points that have been made by the other speakers are all extremely valid and to the point. One thing I would like to say, and I think what Sean Murphy has said is absolutely to the point, the revenue have to be much more sensitive. You know, we all understand they have money to draw for central government. We understand that. However, one of the points that he has made, and I would absolutely concur with him, is if someone has been in business and doing things right for 25 years, you don't have to step in and kick them at the first opportunity.
I would say, by the way, in revenue's defence, because the other side of our firm is an accountancy business, is that if you let revenue know in advance that you have problems, they will absolutely deal with you on a fair basis.
Yeah,
now, there was also developments of the increase in cash receipts, which meant that you don't pay VAT until the money is in. Mm-hmm. That's very good for a lot of businesses. Now, if you can't pay your VAT bill, then you are effectively, it's a very serious offence, because you're denying revenue the money that was never intended for you, never mind not paying income tax. You know, so you've got to let them know. And if you do, and you do so in advance, they will probably make you a payment plan. You still have to pay. I mean, anything that doesn't result in you paying that taxes is effectively saying, I'm not paying my taxes. And that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But they will give you a plan, and they will work with people. And we've seen that time and time again. They go in and attach when you take the mic. Mm-hmm. That's normally what happens.
Okay, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I think for starters, one has to admire revenue in terms of the success they've had in terms of raising the local property tax, just the success rates and that. That's a big achievement. So this is not an anti-revenue rant or anything like that. It's down to, you know, the sense one gets that around the country you have different approaches from different inspectors of taxes. You have different procedures put in place in terms of how long a tax clearing certificate will be given for. These are the type of things where, you know, a bit more flexibility. No one's actually saying that in any way, shape or form a business doesn't pay the VAT man. I mean, you know, you watch Dragon's Den, everybody says pay the VAT man. You know, that's a given. But it's a question of just a bit of sensitivity and recognition of past procedures would be very beneficial.
And we're almost at the end of the programme now. And just back to, I suppose, where we started in terms of hopefully businesses around the country will have a good Christmas, money will be made and people will do okay. David Brennan, the types of jobs, I mean, we're hearing, you know, about the increases in employment, people in employment over the last couple of months is going up. How much of those numbers come from the retail sector? And are those the types of jobs that this economy needs? Or are they too low paid, zero contract hours, etc., etc.?
Please forgive me if I smile. At this moment in Ireland, a job is a job. And I will not in any way countenance any form of conversation that is saying a job is not good enough. A job is a job. Now, all of the people around this table have agreed on a whole series of issues here tonight. Retail lost 25% of its employment. Yes, there is no question retail does not pay incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is the issue that it is constant and it is consistent business. Any form of business, and you know, it's really interesting to listen to the men around me here tonight. They're all younger than I am and they're all bright and sharp. Yes, retail will always be there. Yes, there will be retail jobs. But I've already indicated to you that the world is changing, we are changing, mm-hmm. and we're going to have to do the internet.
Cara, do you agree that a job is a job regardless of how much it pays and the terms and conditions?
No, but not to disparage your point. It's to say that I think people should start on a career path. I think that when you absolutely need to have something, yes, a job is a job. Does one rank above the other? It's very subjective. Retail is relevant, though, and we're still very good at tourism. We have a lot of arable land. I do think that people shouldn't turn their nose to it as too good for it, and take it as an opportunity. It's excellent training for business. I would suggest that everyone, if you had to do a few things in your life, work in retail, work in construction, work in a pub, and then study accountancy. If you do those things, you'll be fit for the world. That's just my own view.
John Murphy.
Well, the one good thing is there was a shakeout of about 70,000, 80,000 jobs at least in retail in the downturn. But equally, with an upturn, that could that shakeout, the retail could create 30,000 jobs very fast. Mm-hmm. And that's, and they'd be good jobs, giving people first access to jobs and first steps in their career. This is really beneficial.
Retail and tourism are two areas that we can get jobs very quickly.
Great
and
stuff.
They are vital to the economy.
I'll give the last word to Maria Bennett. She says, I'm enjoying this debate. I'm so sick of hearing long-winded politicians spouting off when they are clueless. Your panel knows what they're talking about. Happy Christmas, and happy Christmas to you too, Maria. We are not here on the late debate tomorrow night. The former British Prime Minister, John Major, is in Dublin tomorrow, and he's giving a speech at Ivy House. That's the Department of Foreign Affairs. And that speech will be broadcast in our time slot at 10 p.m. tomorrow night. So we'll be back with the late debate on Thursday night at the usual time, when we'll be debating accountability and transparency in the Gardaí. Until then, from all of us, good night.
The late debate was presented by Audrey Carvel and produced by Donal O'Hurley. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. The researcher was Richie Byrne. And sound supervision tonight was by Kevin McCluskey.